like, I think that before the internet was like completely sort of colonized, that like small, tiny mid period that we got to experience because of our age.
Yeah.
There were some like positive memes floating around. And they, like, they weren't all like memetic hazards like they are now that like make everyone like brain sick. And one of my favorite memes from that era was the rent is too damn high meme. And that guy, that was such a like positive like meme because it got everyone talking about something that's actually like super true and like actually could motivate people.
Definitely. Well, it's like it was the time where there was a lot of talk about gentrification.
Yeah.
But then zero action or anything done to stop any of it.
Yeah.
So now every city has a box park, and, you know.
Yeah.
Suffers from the same kind of ailments.
Yeah.
Purely because some might suggest that it's a similar kind of economic infrastructure that suggested to many kind of influential and business leadery type people, and then they go and implement that in all of the different areas of the world, which is how then you get those horrible news clips of Justin Trudeau and you know, Macron and everyone else kind of saying the same kind of thing. And you're like, that is actually the same exact phrase that such and such, and what there's some sort of group that you're all in contact with, maybe, that's sort of disseminating some kind of instructional guidance as to how they want the economies of these major Western nations to run, or maybe that's conspiratorial. I don't know. Speaking of which, the Bilderberg meeting did actually happen this week.
Oh, God, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But, like, the thing that I guess made me think of that meme is because, like, it was, like, a positive statement that, like, caught fire. Which is rare these days. Most of the things that catch fire, like in terms of virality and going viral, are things that are destructive or that motivate negative action. Or paranoia. Like if you look at all the memes that float around about like seed oils or microplastics, like
we're in different areas of the internet, I feel like a lot of the time. Like we are in very different areas.
I'm in all the schizo areas, so I see all of the memetic hazards. I've got like brain guards around. I like meditate a lot, you know. I like do a lot of energy work, so I'm like kind of slightly less vulnerable to memetic hazards like most people. Than a lot of people, but like most people like don't really like question the memes they see. And the thing is, memes are kind of designed to get past your conscious mind anyway, so you're not even consciously realizing that you're absorbing certain fears, phobias, like bad mentalities or this or that.
Like that guy with the rent, like, is too damn high, I feel like is the 1.1 level of memes, if you know what I mean.
But even
like,
then, he's...
Level 1.0 was those kind of box things with the picture and the colourful thing.
Yeah.
And then, like, the top and bottom text.
Yeah.
And then it kind of elevated into actually using, like, little clips from news and, like, actual characters in real life. And he was kind of one of the first ones of those.
Maybe he's, like, a Discordian wizard.
Oh, I doubt it.
And he decided to... Because, like, think about it. He was that... How is he not memeable? He's, like, the most memeable human being. Like, he quaffed...
He was kind of a caricature.
Yeah, but dude, he quaffed and trimmed and waxed his beard into this like weird like testicle shape. And he had like a Colonel Sanders mustache. Like he literally looked like
he was trying to go viral, trying to be a meme. He was an eccentric southern preacher. And like, I think of people of a certain age, if you describe that, I think almost that guy is going to be one of the first things that would come into their heads, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He kind of quintessentially summed up that archetype and that caricature of an eccentric southern black preacher.
Yeah.
And he kind of nailed it in that regard, which is why he went so viral.
Also the passion with which he spoke. He was like a preacher.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking about something real that affects a lot of people, his eccentric appearance, like it was sort of perfect for virality in that sense. And it was a viral message that like actually hit the public consciousness. I'm not saying that it necessarily motivated any action per se, but it's still something that's like in the back of everyone's head, which gives me hope. It gives me hope in like a weird way, I guess.
There were some positive ones, even in the level one memes, like of the square image memes or whatever. Like there was one, I can't remember if it was like a porcupine or like whatever silly animal they decided it was, but it was like, spilt a glass of milk. Don't worry, guy, grab another one. It's like stupid, like positive, like, do you know what I mean?
Wholesome,
silly things. Silly like things. That.
We need more of that, though. We need more good, positive things.
Velociraptor was my favorite one of those old school memes.
Yeah. Which one was that one again?
It was just like the picture of a velociraptor with his like claw up like this, and then I think he was like maybe scratching.
Was
his
it like a philosophical
some, like, philosophical quote or something? Like, yeah, that's silly.
No, I think that more stuff needs to capture the potential of virality that's like positive, because everything that seems to capture sort of mimetic power these days seems to be either demoralizing or meant to inspire negative thought patterns and shit.
I think that's part of like what people see in someone like Elon Musk, though, and he is like a meme at the same time as well as a person, if you know what I mean. Like the whole like positivity and something to hope for, all of those things. It's like there are very few of those things to really see these days. Mm-hmm. And then because Elon kind of has this like, we're going to Mars fucking thing.
Yeah.
Even though, obviously, let's just not get into the weeds of that ridiculousness. But like, people, that idea is then the positivity.
Mm.
So that's like,
they hold on to like mimetic. He's like sort of taking advantage of the mimetic power of that idea.
Yeah.
And they're sort of enchanted and seduced by the image. Like,
yeah,
and the sort of like vibe or whatever.
Exactly.
It's kind of, I don't know, it's sad that that's like the use that this tool, this like really like amazing tool that we have, is like being put to. But all the more reason why you can't be like too vulnerable psychologically when you're like embroiled in anything to do with the internet, because everything goes into your unconscious mind, which I think a lot of people forget. That it's basically like a tape recorder. And like, I find myself having sometimes, like, I might have some weird paranoia or something or some insecurity. And I'll be like, wait a minute, why do I feel this way? Or where did I hear that from? And I'll be like, oh, I heard it like said, and it's like been a meme or something that people have been repeating frequently that's just sort of become a belief on its own, which is not a good thing.
Yeah.
But that's what it's designed to do.
The internet kind of, I feel like the internet kind of spreads those things, and there's often like dry ice. You know how it's like there's no smoke without fire kind of saying. Where in the internet there actually is no fire. It's just kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Whereas like the ones you hear kind of in real life, there does always tend to be some version of some form of something to base something on.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
All the Oxford Street stuff.
Oh yeah,
like all those candy stores.
So let me explain it, because we have a largely American audience. So
Oxford Street, for anyone that doesn't know anything about London, was like a historically like a big shopping street. It's like a mile and a half long that has all the top brands and all of this kind of stuff on it. In the last 10 years or so, as like obviously retail shopping has massively changed, all that's filled in a lot of those spaces of massive iconic stores like HMV and like the Body
Top Shop.
Top Shop, all sorts of stuff. Is just these really gaudy, fucking gross American candy stores.
Yep.
That seem to now, in the last couple of years, have sort of like started to shift and blend into selling, yes, American candy, but also Harry Potter souvenirs.
and like cell phone cases
and
vapes.
Then if they start to really just like not give a shit, they'll literally just turn it into some sort of like Middle Eastern market, and there'll be just gold rings and jewelry and everything placed in tables like in the middle, and then there's still all this like American candy and phone cases like on the side.
Like, so this is basically London's most populous, maybe outside of like the super posh places like Knightsbridge and like Mayfair. This is London's most like poppy
kind of shopping.
Yeah, that's a different kind of shopping. This is where, this is more like everybody, tourists, yeah, normal people go to Oxford Street Standard, and it's like a very historical part. And obviously people have started to get suspicious as to why half of it is now occupied by American candy stores, ones that nobody actually goes in. I never see anyone go into those shops.
No, they're always empty.
They're always empty, yet they can buy prime, or they can afford to pay rent on prime real estate on Oxford Street. And like, obviously there's been a lot of suspicion about it, but there have recently been some exposés done that have shown that there's like a bunch of tax evasion going on.
Yeah, but my point was, the yeah, word on the street was
money laundering.
There's money laundering, yeah, in some way.
Yeah.
There's everybody everybody looks at that and goes, there's no fucking way,
yeah,
that you're selling M&Ms.
Yeah.
And a surviving, yeah, like on Oxford Street,
yeah,
when your shop is that empty.
They sell Captain Crunch
every day,
Pop Tarts, like stuff that we, yeah, can't get in England, but like stuff we don't want either, yeah, because it's trash.
No, that's not even true. In England, no, in the last like 5 to 6 years, I would say.
Like there's a little American section.
American section in like the, most yeah, grocery stores where in you London, can get all of that stuff.
Yeah, but nobody buys it because we have better stuff. I'm sorry, yeah, but you guys are suffering out there. Like,
I'll get some Pop-Tarts, but...
Yeah, Jake will, because he's like a dirty stoner boy. But I'd rather have like a pastry that I can get cheaply next door at a fresh bakery than eat a fucking Pop-Tart. You know, like nobody, we're not really crazy. Nobody's really like dying for American candy like that in England.
Yeah, we have much better candy.
Yeah, it's like Europe, you know, in general. We're not like looking to buy Hershey's chocolate or Reese's peanut butter cups. Like we have better stuff out here. And like the fact that this historical part of London is now solely occupied by these gaudy American candy shops. This display is horrible. The signage is cheap, and like it's full of disgusting, like probably carcinogenic sugar, fucking freak, radioactive stuff like that they're selling for people to eat. And it's also hideously overpriced. So like a packet of sweets will cost you like £17. And it's, yeah, like, okay, so nobody's going here. It's obvious that something sus is going on. Turns out there's a bunch of tax evasion going on, and there hasn't been much incentive to investigate it because the landlords are happy that they're getting money.
But they're not. I don't think they are. I don't. That's all part of it. I don't, like, it's completely unclear how or, yeah, who is profiting in, yeah, the situation.
Yeah.
Because it's, if it's some sort of loophole where, because they're owed money,
yeah,
that then looks like an asset in your thing to get credit or trade or stocks or whatever the fuck, I, yeah, don't fucking understand, then it doesn't matter if they ever pay it or not.
Mm.
They will just keep getting all of these.
But even then,
souvenir shops kind of before then as well, which were also shit.
Yeah, but they were, but they were official. They were like official souvenir shops, which is
some of them
were. But when I was a lot younger, that was the case. And like this whole thing is kind of a, I guess, unified theorem for how everything is like for the highest bidder. And that makes me really angry because a lot of, especially in England, we're kind of going through this like identity crisis at the moment. It was recently the Queen's Jubilee, and it was a sad affair. No one gave a shit. no one was really out like that. There's an economic crisis going on. People are just recovering from this fucking 2-year pandemic. No one gave a shit. It was a sad display. They had Kate Moss on a fucking double-decker bus with, like, Naomi Campbell trying to, like, hype up the crowd, and, like, no one was cheering. No, it was, like, really, like, it was shambolic.
Because they both probably supplied the Queen with, like, young girls for fresh blood at some point.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, basically, after that, like, a million op-eds were penned about how England is going through an identity crisis, and how British patriotism is dying, and how culture is eroding. And of course, there are certain conservative outlets that were blaming immigration for this. But then you see,
they don't know who the Queen is.
they're blaming the sort of multicultural society that we have in the UK, and the denizens of the empire, people like me, basically, are now fully British. and we have a different culture to than like the sort of standard like Rule Britannia ethos of yesteryear. And these, the thing that annoys me is these people will blame people like me for eroding British culture and values, but then Oxford Street is literally for the highest bidder. This historical part of London has been colonized by Iranian-run, or what was it? Afghanistani-American candy shops. It seems like neoliberalism is the thing that's eroding your culture and your fucking values. It has nothing to do with me. The fact is you have a system that's designed around an ideology and like a incentive system that doesn't give a shit about culture, doesn't care about community ethos, doesn't care about civics. All it cares about is fucking profit. So why not like turn St. Paul's Cathedral into a fucking chicken shop if it's profitable? Who gives a shit about history? Who gives a shit about continuity? All the stuff that conservatives and shit in this country claim to care about. They support policies that completely erode that. Completely erode it and fly in the face of it. And those shops on Oxford Street are an example. We have to look at these eyesore American candy shops that nobody goes in. Nobody can afford to buy the things in. They're ugly. They're pointless.
See, you laughed at me. I think it was probably like last year.
Because you work in Soho Square. So we have to pass this place like all the time.
Yeah.
Like whenever I come to meet you, whenever you're... You know, whatever. When I was working there, when I was working in Soho as well, a few feet behind you, I had to pass them even more because I was closer to the station. So we see these all the time. And it's a fucking eyesore. And it's a shame because it's a historical part of London. And I mean, it's not the biggest deal in the world, obviously, but it's like sort of like a litmus test, and it's kind of representative of a wider issue that doesn't just affect Oxford Street. It affects so many different historical parts of London, historically working class areas. Look at Ladbroke Grove of yesteryear, where African and Caribbean immigrants were living. It's not Ladbroke Grove of fucking today. And it's also close to where the Grenfell tragedy happened.
Yeah.
Not too long ago. And that was also another failure of the system.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know Grenfell Tower tragedy, it was an absolutely horrible, horrible incident where the council had ignored complaints about fire safety issues in this high rise around that sort of Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove area. And the place caught fire and 100 more or plus people died.
Yeah.
Screaming. And we lived in the area at the time when that happened.
Yeah, not too far.
Not too far. And yeah, it was a really, really like tragic thing. And Grenfell Tower was sort of when, I guess it was like the sort of callous, most callous version of neoliberalism was sort of unleashed on the city. And it's turning it into a fucking hellhole.
Yeah.
Like there was a certain romantic air to London, at least not too long ago, if you know what I mean, despite all the problems. But that's also sort of quickly disappearing, as all that made London what it was, all that gave it its character, all that gave it its spirit, like so much music, so much culture that has had such a massive global impact has come from the city. But all the places where that was, you know, coming out of have now been turned into
morphed
fucking, turned into fucking flats that no one can afford, basically. That's like, and it's becoming more like Paris, because the reason why Paris sucks and I fucking hate Paris is because this started happening in Paris at least 15 years earlier than London.
Yeah.
And that was why I would have such a shit time when I went there, because I was like, oh, the only people that live in Paris are rich people and the people who come into the city to serve them, basically. So all that charm and character, you can still find it in certain places, but for the most part, you're locked out of it unless you're like going to Paris to spend a lot of money. It's not just the sort of place where it's fun anymore to just casually have a bit of a jaunt.
But this does remind me
when I
told the story of when we lived in Fulham and we went to Becky's Pizza.
Oh yeah.
You know, I propose in that episode that there should be some kind of business czar of, you know, an area that has ultimate authority as to whether you run a business in that area or not.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Bring in the
now
Stalinism. I'm tired
of
it.
If any fans know which Becky's Pizza, which number Becky's Pizza was, let me know. And go and listen back to that, because you said that my idea for a business style was ridiculous.
Did I?
And that's just so ridiculous.
Well, I don't necessarily
and authoritarian
think.
And like terrible.
I don't necessarily.
I was like, hey, listen, if you had a business style, all you just do is send the boys in to all of those candy shops. He's like, what's going on here? You're like, what? Okay. You're all under arrest. Okay, you're all coming with me because you're running a fraudulent business.
It's like, does the business?
Not only that. It's just a disgrace. I don't
not just that. Does the
so
business
long,
fit
is,
the area? Does it fit the needs of the community?
Exactly. All of those things.
Is it like the same? There was another incident not too long ago in Shoreditch. And it was before Shoreditch was fully gentrified. It was while they were gentrifying Shoreditch, basically. So there was still... And Shoreditch was not this fancy, like, hipster village. It's like Shoreditch is like our... I don't know, like, queen... Like, I don't know what part of New York. It's kind of our Brooklyn, I think.
Yeah, it's just like a trendy, bougie place where...
But this was...
quote-unquote young people are supposed to go and hang
out. This was before... this was... at the very tail end of when it was being gentrified, and basically it's like a historically quite poor and quite black part of London before all of that shit, and a cereal cafe basically moved there. It was two, I think they went to Oxford, two like twats with like two-tone hair, basically. Again, American cereal decided that they were going to open a cafe that sold exclusively bowls of American cereal with different flavors of milk and toppings. And each bowl of cereal, I think, was like £7. And there were huge demonstrations against the shop to the point where it had to close down. And people were like throwing shit at it because it's a ridiculous thing and a superfluous thing, considering most of the people who lived in the area at the time, it wasn't a product that they could afford. But obviously they weren't supposed to be the clientele. It was the people, the new sort of influx of young people into that part of the city that were, you know, supposed to be being served in that sense. But yeah, it would be good to have some regulation in an ideal society. And like, especially with like conservatives who claim to care about history, continuity, community, historical placement, all of those things. You would want to have some kind of overseer that, you know, evaluates whether or not a business has value or whether it goes with the ethos of the community, whether it serves the needs of the community, whether it's going to disrupt anything that's like historical. Any of those things are no longer taken into account. I don't think people realize how much of a fucking wild, wild west it is right now.
Yeah.
In London, like they would, I'm telling you, if it was more profitable for fucking St. Paul's Cathedral to be a chicken shop, they would fucking turn St. Paul's Cathedral into a fucking chicken shop, mate. I'm telling you. They would make Big Ben McDonald's.
They'd start selling Oreos at Buckingham Palace.
They will. If it literally, it's all for the highest bidder. So this idea of like European culture and values, this idea of like preserving history or community and all of this fucking shit, it's all bullshit if you don't support policies and support systems that enable the protection of those things. Because this laissez-faire neoliberalism bullshit, it destroys culture, it erodes culture, it displaces people.
Yeah, I mean, you have to bid for everything now. Even, you know, I've seen it was a trend on the for sale signs I had noticed.
Yeah.
Like, more and more over the last year, I'd seen, like, instead of just saying for sale, it says at auction at this place, because the market's so fucking crazy right now that people just fucking bid like crazy. And now even down to the point where like we're having to look for a fucking new place and renting somewhere
is kind of
a silent bidding war.
You don't want to know what we've been through in the last couple of weeks since we found out we had to move. It's really, really crazy. And also,
this is a lovely place. Okay, well, we have had 10 offers already, so this might be the asking price, but if you want to like absolutely make sure that you're fucking going to get this place. Put a crazy offer in, basically. Yep. Over the asking price.
Yep.
Like, crazy lease
And you're
time.
Competing with, like, 15 other people for, like, one place. It's crazy.
It has
and it's because
peak
it's,
madness
it's, yeah,
for and, this housing crisis
And
it,
the prices have gone up. So that's the reason we're moving, because, you know, we had problems with DJ Dickhead next door. And I threw eggs at his window. It was, like, 5 in the morning. And he was, like, fucking blasting jungle and, like, drum and bass. And I just lost my shit. I, like... had been dealing with this guy for nearly 2 years. We've been here for 2 years now. And I just, like, couldn't take it anymore. So I, like, threw eggs at his window. And then some fucking Karen upstairs reported me to the landlord because she just moved in. So she doesn't know the history or, like, track record of everything that's been going on. And it was already coming up to the end of our contract. And our landlord was just like, yeah, I'm not going to renew it. And also he raised the rent by, I think, £300 more thereabout.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on the market for like £300, not dollars, not your weird Monopoly money that you guys use, but real pounds sterling, £300 sterling more than what we're currently paying.
That's
so,
what I do kind of want to talk to, like, I want you with your media power, right?
I don't have any media power. What are you talking about?
Economist. That does the rounds, like, on the
I could
podcast.
Try to get, like, Richard Wolf or someone
yeah,
like that. That would
because
be
because I want to know what happens in this situation, because, like, okay, the rent's going up, the gas is going
well,
up.
Well, it's not just our it's not just our
up,
it's not just our shit. It's not just our place that's gone up.
But
everything.
Everywhere.
And it's because the pandemic has ended and all the professionals who left London during the pandemic are now flooding into the city once again now that it's over and everything's open and they're expected to be in the office 7 days a week. So rent has gone up. So either way, we're probably going to be paying more.
5 days a week. It's not Victorian England.
Oof, whatever. It might as well be
you
Dickensian.
Be in a workhouse.
I wish there was.
Week.
Look, I wish there was a workhouse because I would break rocks happily and get fed 3 meals of gruel a day.
Oh my God.
If it didn't mean I had to put up with what we're currently. I'm joking. But yeah, like literally, we went to. So yeah, we are. Everything's gone up now. There's an energy crisis and they're anticipating blackouts in the winter. That's how bad it's gotten.
Yeah.
Inflation, like every time we go to the grocery store, we're spending at least like fucking a quarter more than we're used to. It's crazy. It is fucking insane.
But then, so like people's wages do have to get raised with this, right?
Mm-mm. Like absolutely that, not. No, like that, like, absolutely not, dude. Like, and that's the thing. They made us all insane for 2 years in live in the pod, eat bugs or whatever. And now opened it up and now in a fucking insane fucking economic crisis is like they're just pouring fire onto the gasoline.
Well, I remember
people are shit's going to start getting like we're already living in a war of all against all to use like Christopher Lash's term. People are more hostile. People are more antisocial. People are more self-interested. People are more in for themselves. That's the reason why the landlords have just decided to scalp everyone and raise all the fucking rent and shit. Everybody's out for themselves. Even me and Jay. This property search that we're doing now in order to house ourselves before we get kicked out of this place, we have having to do like efficient Japanese shit. We have like fucking spreadsheet. We have a motto to like increase morale. Like we're really like on it. And we have to because we're fighting against other couples. And it really is dog eat dog, every man for himself. And that's the world we're entering. You think that people would become more altruistic and understanding considering the predicament we're in, but the precise opposite is what's incentivized. Everybody is out for themselves. And it is breaking down. Not only is it invading the social sphere in the sense that it's breaking down social relations, it's breaking down communities, it's breaking down social bonds, it's also eroding our culture. I'm a Londoner through and through. This is the city I was born in, you know? It displaces yeah. people in terms of social stuff it fucks shit up, but also in terms of like cultural shit it fucks shit up. And if you're somebody who claims to give a shit about culture and values and community or any of those things, history, continuity, the system we have right now has absolutely no respect for that whatsoever. no respect for that. And there's nothing set up in order to preserve those things.
No, but it does feel like, you know, you're at the edge of the ever growing cliff of economic tension, right? Like, I remember in 2018 or 2017, fucking there being reports about wage stagnation and how, you know, manager, like CEO class or whatever, wages went up however many hundreds of percent versus the meager rise of like average workers over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And all of this kind of, so it was already very bad.
Yeah.
Fucking 4 years ago, five yeah. years ago,
yeah.
to the point where it was like, something's got to be, I mean, we've got to adjust this. It's yeah. got to change. You've yeah. got to really raise people's wages
no.
to afford
no.
them to do the, you know, next part of development yeah. for the country, basically. Yeah. And, you know, now none of that still happened.
Yeah.
And it's even worse.
Yeah.
So I can't see how it you can get any worse.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It
can,
now,
though,
it
which is the
like
scary
this is
thing.
This is the tipping point.
No, dude.
Like, it has to now something at this point.
No.
Change.
Nope.
Because it's unsustainable.
It's unsustainable, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to, inspire change. And especially in the political situation we're in now, where we have a psychopathic Tory government at the helm and a, you know, toothless neoliberal Labour Party that's sort of ousted every faction that claimed to have any allegiance to workers and everyday people. It's pretty bleak in terms of political options in that sense. And secondly, for us, like, if just use us as a microcosm, if you were to get a Tory drunk and to like a Tory politician, and we were to get him drunk and give him wine and cheese nibbles or whatever it is they eat, and like tell them our predicament, they would, if they were speaking truthfully, they would say, you're not of the class to afford living in London. And then we would say, but we work here and we have to be here in order to work, because we're both media professionals, and the media city, the media industry is concentrated within the city, and commuting is also expensive because the trains are insane. And even if we did move out of London, the money that we saved on rent, we would be spending in commuting. And they would tell us, well, tough shit, you shouldn't be a media professional because you're not of the class of people who are media professionals. And the other day, because you got invited to this comedy show, and there were a lot of media professionals there or whatever, and you decided to bring me along. And I realized that we're really not of the class of media professionals. These are like...
Oh, you can't judge that.
No, that was, Jake, we go, I realize it. We're really... Yeah. Most people who want to be in the media in this country have to fucking afford living in London.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth. There's a million things gatekeeping people in this country specifically who are not from upper middle class to upper class backgrounds from entering that industry. And the majority of people and gatekeepers and everyone else and their dogs are fucking posh toffs. They're fucking posh toffs. And that's why they look at us like we're fucking freaks, because we're this like weird hippie interracial couple that clearly aren't from like the fucking upper crust. Yet we're like doing better than a lot of those people in terms of how far we've come at our age, our talent, our passion, what we're willing to give, the hours that we work. It's just rigged. It's all fucking rigged. And it's rigged in this really obvious way in the UK that's like different from America, because class is so pronounced, so much more so than race even.
Mm.
It's so pronounced and it's so fucking obvious. And it's always been a thing in terms of London as a city, but only in concentrated areas in the past. Now the whole city is becoming basically barred off to anyone who doesn't make over like 200K a year. And we're talking pounds, mate, not dollars, not Monopoly money that you guys have over there. Fake money. I'm joking. It's crazy. It's so crazy. And like, if the economic if the economic situation gets any worse, maybe there'll be civil unrest, maybe there won't. But even if there is, 2011 prepared the UK police, because there was a huge riot in 2011, massive, massive riot in 2011 that really, like, swept the city. And ever since then, our police have been slowly militarizing. There's even laws now that ban demonstrations and protests and restrict them to insane degrees. So even if there is civil unrest, there'll be massive repercussions for that civil unrest. And yeah, it's just, it's a crazy, crazy time. And I feel more afraid, especially in Europe and England specifically, where we don't have stuff like a constitution to protect us.
No, but like, that's why I want to talk to an economist, because like, is it like a crazy suggestion that you go and ask your boss or whatever for fucking more money when the time comes around, your contract or whatever the fuck?
It depends on your, it depends on the, it really depends on the culture of your company. And also it depends on the types of relationships you've fostered.
Well, it's like they all the, if you work for a big company, especially, like they all try, they're all very tuned in with the worries of the day, right?
Yeah.
They're very, aware of all of the things they should be for good optics.
Yeah.
And for a hot second,
not economically, well, though, no, socially,
for a hot second,
socially they'll do all the BLM like global homo stuff, but they're not gonna.
The economic thing was in the very beginning of all of this sort of wokeification of corporate culture, if you want to call it that. Where there was a company in Seattle that made the claim of I'm not gonna, as the CEO or whatever, I'm cutting my salary from $500,000.
The whole co-op model type of thing.
We're all paid the same.
Yeah.
Because we all need to achieve a standard of living in Seattle, and rent is fucking crazy. And I heard some of the stories from my youngest employees or whatever, and that was fucking crazy. So I decided to make it equal for everyone. And it's just like, I'm not expecting companies to do that, because that's quite radical, and I've got massive kudos to the guy that did that, because he's still running it, it's still successful. He had all the Warren Buffetts and everyone, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah, but even
you're
then,
you're not going to be successful business if you pay your workers so much money or blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
it's just like, well, they're still doing great, and they're fucking, that's 6 years
but
later.
even then that's just like one benevolent guy. You're talking about laws and things that actually are applied ubiquitously.
Like, we realize that rent,
they're not
is
incentivized
being
to,
like,
especially
crazy.
No, especially if they're a company that's public, their biggest allegiance is to their stakeholders. So they'll shave down everything, fire people, do whatever the fuck it takes in order to ensure that their stakeholders are appeased, because that's the most important thing, even beyond the actual innovation of the company and investing in areas that would benefit good technologies or whatever the fuck it is that the company produces. Even that's deprioritized over what will please stakeholders. So why the fuck are the like, if is a company gonna turn around and be like, oh, there's an economic crisis and there's inflation, like, we're gonna raise everybody's one salary? If you're dealing with this like a corporation, that's highly unlikely.
Well, because the cost of getting new people and training them and doing all of that
doesn't
is
matter.
Surely going to be,
they'd
more
rather do that. They'd rather do that than
valued,
like,
employees.
No,
like,
they'd
happy,
rather do
right?
that than and have their books balanced and their stakeholders like appeased. Even if it means training up new people, it's like the most important thing. It's prioritized. And I'm not going to say there aren't companies that may have a culture that's different, or it really depends on the culture of the company and the nature of the beast, basically. But in most cases, I doubt that that will be the case. I don't think that there's going to be a rise in wages. I don't think that that's the case. I think that, like, what people are being told, and what Tories and people who I know who are very sort of that kind of aligned mentally, their whole thing is just make more fucking money then.
But if you ask,
that's their whole thing. They're just like, well, just make more fucking money.
So what you leave? So is that like you leave the job you have to then
pursue something that's money, that's money,
paying you more money,
or to start a business, or to do something that will create more income. And that's their whole sort of ethos, is just make more fucking money then, like quit complaining and keep grinding. And obviously, practically, in terms of practical advice, if you can increase your income during this time, if it's a possibility, then you probably should. I'm not going to say you shouldn't. You probably should. But what I don't like is that is saying that as a sort of cure-all for a clearly systemic issue and a clearly economic issue.
Yeah.
Like if I was talking to a friend or a close family member or to myself or whatever during this time, and we were talking about, like, you know, our woes, and make more money would be good advice if it's something that's within their possible reach or whatever, depending on their lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think that should be doled out in this sort of flippant way when there are, like, you know, economic and social reasons why people are in the predicament they're in now. And I mean, regardless of whatever happens, we're going to be okay because we make enough to just about afford a place in London. And we will, you know, we'll do what we can to keep going by, and we'll probably not be able to do as many things because now things are far more expensive and we have to prioritize, you know, necessities a lot more now. But I feel so much more for the people who are not going to be okay.
Yeah.
And who don't have a hope and who this has completely destroyed their lives.
And don't like reading books.
What?
It's just been 2 years of the pandemic. Have you not exhausted Netflix and Amazon and all the things for all the stuff to watch and fucking all the shit video games that are out now? If you can't go out and do stuff because everything's expensive, you're going to have to occupy yourself and your time and your brain in other ways. And for me, I can't just sit and watch crap.
Yeah.
So I'm probably just going to end up reading a lot more books.
Yeah, yeah. But that's kind of what they want us to be, atomized consumers living in the pod. And if the outside world is... You're disincentivized from engaging outside because everything costs money. Where are you? In your house. Streaming, cooming, gaming. And, like, not only that, like, a lot of the places where
you have to take control then, don't you? And so, yeah, you're in your house because you can't afford to go to nice places or go to restaurants very often anymore or live.
Not just going to a park, like, the trains are expensive. Even going, like, everything's expensive.
So, but what you can
the meal
do,
you eat while
but,
you're
but,
out.
But what you can do is grow mushrooms indoors and have lots of great books and nice music. And expand yourself inwardly. Like
you can expand yourself inwardly, which is what I advise people to do whenever, even during the pandemic and stuff. Like that's something that I was like really like advocating or whatever. But it takes a tremendous amount of self-discipline when there are easy options for entertainment and diversion in front of you.
Of course.
And that's the thing. They know that. Like, the powers that be understand that. They know that it's very difficult and takes a tremendous amount of discipline to avoid the sort of traps that result from isolation and precarity. And that's what they're putting everyone in. So if outside is too expensive, you'll stay indoors more. Like, think about it. We've been seeing places this week. Most of the people have been young couples, many of them much older than us. None of them have children. Even in some of the old places where we lived, where it was like a house share situation, basically everyone in the house shares were in their mid to late 30s. No partner, no children. And then I was thinking today as we were walking, I was like, what if me and you had a kid and we were going through what we were going through now? We would probably have to change our kids' school. We would have to displace them. We would be panicking even more because we would want to make sure that we can find somewhere that's conducive enough for us and our child. Like, it's crazy. And that's why nobody's having kids. And, like, there's nothing that neoliberalism hates more than family, community. Because the more isolated you are, the more you consume, the more you work.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like a fucking conveyor belt.
And they've built all these very convenient pods now for you to live in, which don't get yourself kidding and think you're going to save any money because they're outrageously expensive. But they've got a gym. And they've got
it's literally like we've seen some, and it's like a J.G. Ballard novel. That novel high rise. These like self contained buildings that are built for professionals that have like a fucking gym and a fucking grocery store and a cinema, so that you never have to leave. And they advertise them as if there is this utopia. They call it like co living or communal. Like they try to make it sound hippy dippy, even though it's just this huge corporate scam. But because they have like succulents and plants in the lobby, it's supposed to make you feel like you're like, you know, going
green
to some
living.
Green living, like you're in some wellness colony. And it's like cult-like and fucking weird. That's another scheme that they've put up. And then it's obviously their pods. They're literally pods. Like they're pods that you'll pay an inordinate amount of money for to live.
Yeah.
We've seen all kinds of things. Like some of the ads we've seen, like I was looking on Gumtree, which was a really bad idea. That's like the British version of Craigslist. And the ads on there are so ratchet. Like all the ads on there are like, so that if you're looking for something really cheap, that's where you look. And it's where like all the exploitative, like most exploitative landlords are, with like poorly written English advertisements and stuff. We're dealing with estate agencies, dealing with everything that we can possibly find. And it's just been like eye-opening, I guess, to see just how displaced most people are in this city and how disconnected everyone is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you have to be a bit of a city mouse to want to live in one of those flat things anyway. Like me personally,
I am
like
a city mouse, which is a thing. I have never known anything else.
I grew up in a town. I grew up in somewhere.
I never knew anything else.
Kind of rural, not like super rural, but it's a small town. There's little villages around and stuff. You know, it's a small town life. And people didn't live in flats, right? Like that's, everyone has a house. So like I don't see myself.
The only time where I've ever lived in a house was when we were in America. Because I like grew up in London. I've always lived in flats.
It's so alien to me.
It's normal to me. I've always lived in flats.
Where's your cat gonna go out?
I didn't have a cat. I had a fish. I've always lived in flats, which is a thing.
What I hate about all these new high-rise places as well. They always say they're all fucking pet friendly. How can you have a fucking cat? Have you got a cat superhighway that goes between all the balconies on your flats that then they can get down and they know which flat to then come up to? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? No, you're talking about, yes, you can have a small dog.
Yeah.
In your studio apartment that you're paying fucking $1,500 fucking a month for.
Yeah.
Like, no, motherfucker.
No.
That's discrimination against fucking cat people, okay? And cats. And I don't like it. One fucking bit, okay?
It's really bad. I would, if you found a job somewhere else in Europe, I'd be willing to move somewhere else in Europe. If I had the ability to move abroad, because I, with the type of work I do, which is remote, like a lot of the work I do is remote. And all my various different jobs and things that I do, like I can live anywhere, so it doesn't matter. It's you that's tied to London. But if you found an opportunity,
thank you. Yes.
It's like if you found an opportunity somewhere else in Europe, I'd fucking go live in Amsterdam. I don't give a shit. I'll learn Dutch.
What if I found opportunities up in Manchester?
No, that's not happening. I don't know. I said I want to leave England. You want to take me deeper?
No,
you want to take me deeper into the north? Like hell no.
I couldn't do the north. Oh no.
It's not
heavens.
The north anywhere. I fucking hate this place. I fucking hate this place. And it's become such a cultural wasteland because of all this neoliberalism shit. Everything that was cool about it and novel and interesting has been like completely crushed.
Yeah, you're right though about
crushed
that, because they keep trying to push all of the new stuff like it's as good as all the
old stuff. I know, like, they're like, oh, look at this young punk guy, isn't he next Billy Idol?
What actually happened, Harry Styles' new album has come out and all this press and everything has happened.
It's all fake and gay. Nobody likes Harry Styles.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
And anyone who does is an NPC, okay?
I would probably agree with their everything is awesome type personality.
They're an NPC.
However,
that's been like psyoped by fucking
all this press
brain worms.
And like I think some journalist or maybe even Harry himself like compared himself to Mick Jagger.
Did he?
Yeah. And then like Mick Jagger was then like,
you know nothing of my work.
And he was like, well, I mean, he does look a little bit like my younger self, which he can't help, but let's be honest. Sort of like, you know,
cheeky.
We're not very similar fucking in any other way in regards to that. And, you know.
He makes like fake music for fake people.
Harry Styles, the Rolling Stones.
It's really crazy.
Serious?
And they keep trying to force everyone to like, they keep trying to make fetch happen. And it's just not going to fucking happen. And it's the same thing with the stupid, like, Queen's Jubilee. Like, nobody gives a shit about, like, it's either, like, dusty old relics of the past, or they keep trying to push these new psyop celebrities that are, like, grown in a lab on everyone. And they're like, isn't this just as great as Britpop? Rule Britannia! And it's like, no, it really isn't.
Oh, man.
They've crushed everything that was cool. I would even take the sort of landfill indie era where, like, Camden was the cool place over this, over what we have now. I wish I could go back to 2007 and like,
that was all private school by tough fucking.
Not all of them were toughs.
Well.
Not all of them were toughs.
The one I liked wasn't. Yeah, I bet he fucking was.
No, like, okay, like fucking Arctic Monkeys is an example. They blew up, but they were like working class boys from Sheffield.
Yeah, another band.
Sheffield is in the north.
Massively like.
They've got working class creds.
And have been since the very first single they ever fucking put out. I fucking hate that band so
much.
This is rock and roll. It's like, no, it fucking isn't.
I was like really passionate about them.
Shame if you really putting your stake on that's modern British rock and roll. That's fucking sad.
I think they have some good songs. Like I really liked them when I was like 15. Like, I was a huge fan when I was 15. I was like in love with Alex Turner.
Get
and
in the fucking sea.
I get nostalgic when I hear the song Cornerstone. Like, my heart like bleeds a little bit. But I'm not like a huge fan now because I've outgrown
bands,
it.
The only band out of that era of bands that was
Kasabian,
that had indie cred, but was an Kasabian
was
rock
good.
Band was the White Stripes.
But they're American. I mean, they were over in England during that time. Yeah. And like Jack, what's his face, is a honorary Londoner. We've adopted him, Jack White.
But no, just of that era of like indie bands that were supposed to be the new rock bands.
Yeah.
They were the only band that were actually a rock band.
Yeah.
And it was just fucking like two of them or whatever.
But they I'm not saying that era wasn't full of psyop. Like Julian Casablancas is a psyop. Like loads of people from that era.
What
are,
band was he in?
Fucking The Strokes.
Again, I'm not even familiar with The Strokes.
This is all like teenage bedroom Angie shit from when I was like much younger. But like no, that whole era was full of psyop celebrities as well. And like, but I at least it had a vibe. All the people who they're fucking giving us today and trying to be like, these are the cutting edge of youth culture. It's like fucking people who won X Factor. Like, didn't fucking Harry Styles win, like...
He was in One Direction.
Yeah.
And they
he, like,
were,
won X Factor.
Was that an X Factor
band? Yeah,
it was.
It's a Simon Cowell band. So Simon... Because that was how... At least back in the day, there was, like, a separation between these sort of, like, incredibly mainstream, like, schlocky pop stars and, like... sort of rock and roll and like actual music, but now they're trying to insist that like X Factor winners are the same as the Rolling Stones, and it's like, are you insane?
But that's what I do sound a little bit like Gene Simmons, because I know he had some like interview clips that like went around recently with like Henry Rollins or something, where he's like, the rock stars like cucked themselves.
Yeah, they did cuck
they
themselves.
Don't wanna, like fucking. Take drugs or live a fast life and be surrounded with women with big tits, which everyone loves. And instead now
the rappers are
the rock stars.
Yeah.
And they don't give a fuck. And
but not even anymore. Because the thing about
and, like,
it's the same cycle. It's the same cycle that's going on, because the rockers cocks themselves because rock became corporate, and Gene Simmons was like at the helm of that kind of corporate rock fucking shit. Like Kiss was a corporate rock band. They fucking suck.
Yeah.
But then with rap, same thing. It had roots in working class and poor and like lumpen proletariat, like neighborhoods and shit. And now it's like corporate again. So rap is in the process of cucking itself. And it's part of the reason why I don't like hip hop and I'm not into it. Just in terms of like my genre, there are a million.
It's time to find new sound.
Just in terms of genre, it's not my like first go-to to begin with. But secondly, a lot of the stuff these days is like bland, like it's catchphrases and like memes. It's just like, here's a thing that everyone can relate to or something that everyone's talking about or knows, and I'm going to say it and then people are going to clap. And it's just like really lame.
Yeah.
But like, it's just, but culturally, the UK has been like such a generator in both the 21st and 20th century in terms of music, in terms of culture. There have been several waves of like British culture that have sort of made it across the pond and global. A lot of it came out of like working class black and white neighborhoods, like in London especially. Our working class neighborhoods were not segregated, so black kids and white kids were growing up listening to the same music, had the same cultural influences, influenced each other. A lot of great music, art, fashion, culture like came out of that, and that was sort of a lot of the British culture that like made an imprint during the 20th and 21st century. Like, why do you think Jimi Hendrix came to England? Why do you think that most of his band were English? Like, you know, there was a different ethos, and I hate seeing that like stamped out in favor.
For Jimmy, I think it was the recording technologies and sound.
But also because
in
the 60s, England was cool as fuck.
It was also cool.
Like, excuse me, have you ever walked down Portobello Road? And imagine how fucking gorgeous it would have been in the 60s.
Hey, California in the 60s sounded fucking cool, man.
If I was in the 60s, I would want to be transatlantic, to be honest. I would want to do summers in London in the 60s. Mm. And then I'd do my winters out in California because it's still hot. Though it's winter. But no, London, England in the 60s was fucking cool.
Yeah.
It had a fucking vibe. It was fucking groovy. And it's because of all of the sort of different influences, cultural influences that were like allowed to flourish during that period. Because the economy didn't necessarily support them, but it didn't crush them. Whereas now we have an economy that doesn't support anything but American sweet shops that are owned by like shady Afghanistani people and Russian billionaires like that's like what's supported, and X Factor and Simon Cowell. That's like our cultural production, and that's disgusting.
Yeah.
That's horrible. That's what's going against across the pond. PSYOP Harry Styles, who's like Harry Styles is a fembot that they've like turned into a male pop star. That's my theory.
Grand Theft Auto is also made here.
Oh yeah, it was, wasn't it?
The studio that made the first Grand Theft Auto was based up in Glasgow, and that became Rockstar North.
Yeah.
And they still make GTA there.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even know that until you told me like last year or something. I was like, shit, we did GTA. That's cool.
So like
we're the land of Alan Moore. We're the land of a lot of cool shit.
There's still massive, cool people that like end
but they're all depressed every time we meet cool people from that era because of your line of work.
Yeah,
they're all like depressed now. Well, not depressed, but there's like a pall that's been cast over them. There's this, a malaise of I don't know whether it's that they have trouble understanding the new world that we're entering, or that they're just shocked by how much everything has changed.
Yeah, they're
not themselves anymore.
I just finished reading Cosmic Trigger with our patrons, which you can join our next book club, by the way, which we're going to be doing Red Book Young. But I just finished Cosmic Trigger, and I've started like halfway through now almost Timothy Leary's flashbacks. And they're both like kind of personal accounts of their life through the Timothy Leary, early 60s, and even some in the 40s and stuff. It was early life. But mostly, like, the area of focus is in, like, the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And you just read about how life was, not even just in fucking California, but in, like, fucking all over, in Alabama and fucking all over the place. Like, it was just, like, a different...
It was like pre-9/11.
Yeah, pre-everything.
Pre-so much shit.
That like the way people lived is just like so
I struggle
different.
To imagine, like, even because our
how
our,
people lived is your... so so different, especially like in this internet age.
Yeah.
It's like completely alien to what life was like.
Yeah.
Or the kind of freedom it felt like people had a lot
more
of.
Yeah.
Like, just to, I mean, especially, I mean, dude, I've read autobiographies from a lot of, like, my favorite musicians of all time. And obviously that period in the 70s especially is, like, where a lot of great music happened. And when they got their start, like Ozzy Osbourne and Lemmy from Motorhead and stuff.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, yeah, we used to have gigs in central London somewhere. Like, in Hammersmith.
Yeah.
We'd put on a show, there'd be 200 people there, and I'd have made my own tab. My own sheets of acid that I've cut up and I'm giving to everybody as they come into the gig to make sure everyone's having a good time. And I'm literally just like, this is a foreign world.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, that should be just, but you wouldn't see it advertised like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this kind of cool thing that went somewhere and something fucking happened.
Yeah.
And like everything is so
regulated,
safety fucking locked down to the max now.
Yep.
That, like, there's just no freedom to
search your booty hole
or, like, fucking off the cuff, kind of like that.
You can't,
to really happen anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It is. No, like, the spontaneity is what you're talking about. The serendipity. It's like the rave scene, for instance, in the UK is so much about serendipity, spontaneity. And that was, like, systemically dismantled and destroyed, at least in London. Outside of London, where it's harder to manage, it's, like,
a lot more.
But, like, in London, which is sort of the centre of that culture, it's a lot more difficult now.
Well, I wouldn't say it's I'm sure lots of cities would claim
the centre lots of they
rave
would,
culture.
But they
I'm
they
sure
don't.
Detroit would claim that.
I'm talking about in the UK specifically, not in the world.
UK, I'm
I'm sure people, Mancunians
and,
would try to pipe up, but the they have,
would
no, they
as
ain't
well.
Got it. They ain't got it the way we got it.
It's the birth of warp.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of cool shit happening around.
I guess I'm just like a London. Like narcissist or whatever. I'm just like, this is where it all happens.
Bristol, even?
Bristol, true.
You know,
Bristol too, that's true.
You couldn't deny Bristol's claim to that,
yeah,
I don't think.
They're like, they have a whole square dedicated to the history of that shit because of where it used to be and stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been crazy. It's been a crazy week of like us thinking all of these weird thoughts while like hunting. Hunting for an apartment in this wild city.
The thing is that what's happening here is going to be happening in
most cities,
major Western cities.
Yeah,
this is not unique to us.
Of course not, no.
It's like everyone that is within an age range and of a social class, which is probably most people listening to this podcast, is going to be going through a similar thing.
Yeah.
Or will have to very shortly if your lease isn't quite up yet.
Yeah.
Sorry to break it to you.
If you're living in a major city, you better like hope you signed a contract that doesn't
or if you're in Berlin
end soon
or cool that has kind of more lenient, you know, renter kind of culture and stuff like that, then good for you. Good for you, okay? But I don't live in Berlin, okay? And I don't live in those other places.
We should move to Berlin. I would be up for that.
What am I going to do in Berlin, bro?
You're a fucking audio guy. You'd
I
fucking
know,
find
but
work
I don't know.
Easily.
The Germans drink too much, man. We're on a different wavelength. That's
but
what
the, I feel like out of the European countries, the English and Germans get on. Like
the Dutch as
we have a similar vibe.
I do get on with the Dutch.
The Dutch are all right. The Dutch are... I don't know.
And the Scandies as well.
The Scandies, I don't know. I can't, I don't know. I don't want to badmouth the Scandies, but there's something a little off about them.
No,
I don't know if it's the language barrier or whatever, but they have an affect that's like quite...
It's just dry.
Yeah,
dry
and it's
affect,
like, why are you so dry, dude? What
I
are you doing?
Love.
It makes me uncomfortable.
Because I don't know.
As a hot, spicy African woman, being around a Scandinavian person is like my polar opposite, and they're like so like they're like a wisp of air, whereas I'm like a raging storm. And I just feel like I'm like so loud and so noisy. I get so self-conscious around them. I'm like, am I causing a ruckus? Am I causing... It's like same with Japanese people. Like when I'm around Japanese people, I feel so like overbearing.
So
I feel so dominating and
so
like
funny.
Overbearing.
I remember, like my basically my best mate that I was in a metal band with when I was in uni and like before and stuff. Confront the Carnage. Go and check it out.
We made many great, don't. That was Don't Look at Jake during his like sweaty goth days. It's so embarrassing. Oh God, cringe. Go.
Yeah, what was I saying? You interrupted me.
I was talking about Japan and how I feel
loud. My best buddy, Jack, he was in this band with me and he went to Japan to live for a while. So like every now and then he has like a friend from that he had made in Japan or an acquaintance he had met in Japan comes to London and they'll like hit him up and they'll talk to the UK and they'll be like, oh, let's meet up and let's chill and do whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember once he was like, yeah, this chick came. And she wanted to hang out and stuff. And I was like, oh, let's go and hang out in Soho Square because that's really cool. And we can hang out with my buddy Jake. But okay, yeah, that sounds great. And I was like, okay. Like, well, if she's friends with Jack, there must have been at least like an amount of social ease and like a freedom to the way you kind of just talking and sort of expressing yourself around and whatever. And I don't know if it was because she was around me and, like, I'm a new person or whatever, but I definitely don't have a very closed-off energy.
No, right? You're, like, super open and, like, you're like a golden retriever.
I've just finished work, and so I come out into the square, and I'm wearing, like, this African thingy that your mum had just given me as well.
So it's, you like, scared
really,
her.
So I look really hippie and, like, you know.
You scared her.
Or whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm just going to roll a joint, and then we can chill and fucking chat, and we were having
a
beer.
Oh, no, you
stuff.
Brought out drugs, Jake.
Yeah, I was smoking a joint with Jack in the park.
Yeah, that's normal like, for that's us like, degenerates.
That's like the basic of us. That is literally fucking the foundation of chilling out. Many friendships of mine. Is like, that is,
but she's like a foreigner. You can't just like bring drugs out.
So no, we were just chilling, I was smoking a joint, and then I passed. I was like, hey, you want to smoke with us? And she's like, oh, no. She's like, really? It was literally like she looked like quite, not offended, but like shocked that
you would offer her drugs casually.
Yeah.
My gosh.
It was just like, it was a real culture shock.
You're like some fucking hippie dude in an African shirt, like frightening this like little Japanese girl.
No, I mean, she was like,
I just can't.
She was older than us. She was like, you know.
Yeah.
She was our age now, and this was like 4 years ago. Okay. So she was nearly 30.
Oh, yeah.
And I was 24 or 25 or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's traveling to the Western countries and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sure I'm not the first ever person
to offer you
a fucking joint. And it's not like I'm offering you a hit of acid. I'm like, you know, I'm offering you a tip on a joint. Like, it's not a... Crazy.
I can't deal with it. It's because you're a fire. It's because you're a Sagittarius. And I'm a Sagittarius rising. We're fire signs. So we can't deal with like soft people. I can't deal with soft people like that. Like whenever somebody is too quiet or too meek in some way, it's not that I don't think they're nice or that I wouldn't be nice to them. It's just hard for me. I feel like I'm like really overbearing when I'm around people like that and I get self-conscious.
Yeah.
And it's like... uncomfortable for me. I prefer being around people who can like match my energy in that sense.
Yeah, or I don't know, sort of like it is I have every time I've met up with one of Jack's Japanese friends, I have found it very difficult to kind of
dude, we need to have a Japan arc in this podcast journey, dude.
Oh my God.
We need to go there for like 3 months and get English teaching jobs and just like chronicle the whole thing. I could not imagine you and I in Japan.
That'd be crazy. That'd be really crazy.
I cannot imagine that. I think we would just be like really obnoxious.
No, it's always like, you know, oh, so, you know, what are you here? What's your sort of interests or like anything? You're just trying to like spark conversation and like get it going, but it is really like
hard.
Yeah, it's like pulling teeth a lot of the time.
Yeah.
There's only ever been one Japanese person that I've had a better.
You got to get him drunk.
No, not at all. I did work with this guy. At the cinema before I when I still worked at View in uni in Fulham called Yoshi. His name is like Yoshiki,
but he was English Japanese though, wasn't he? Like he was like raised here.
He wasn't? No, definitely not.
Oh, wow.
English was his second language. Oh, 100%. Wow. Like, he was a Japanese guy, full on. And yeah. He was great. He was really funny and, like, really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And was very, like, up to talk about anything. And was really,
and
like,
also,
oh.
The guy that owns that karate bar that we're a fan of.
Yeah.
He's crazy. Cool, yeah, he's cool. Crazy. He's crazy.
But, like, he also is, like, he's more... He's definitely been in England for a hell of a lot longer than Yoshi had. Like, Yoshi was like, he was still learning English a lot.
Wow.
I don't know if that was kind of part of it, and he wanted to talk more to sort of help with learning English.
Yeah,
and if
probably.
It was really only that.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like that. Like, his personality felt like he was just generally quite a fun, happy, open guy.
Yeah.
Which was, I now realizing, is clearly quite, or maybe it was because he's a guy.
Maybe girls.
All the other friends of Jack's I've met have been girls.
Girls, and they're like a bit more shy and like.
And maybe it's because I'm a guy.
Yeah. Oh. Maybe.
Right.
Who knows? Maybe that's.
Maybe if I.
Yeah.
Maybe if it was you.
Offering her weed.
No, not offering her weed, but even just trying to have a conversation and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that whole dynamic.
Yeah.
Would probably be completely different.
Maybe. But according to other parts of Europe, British people are quite cold as well, though. Like, there's, like, the Mediterranean countries, Greece, Italy, Spain. Like, they're very kind of different culturally. So, like, us, even France, like, just the continent in general. Like, maybe the French are, like, slightly less... They're not cold. They're cold, but they're very warm to the people who they love and who are they're familiar with. Whereas English people are cold to everybody. This is a cold-hearted, cold country.
I'm
not feeling salty. It's the truth, Jake. You know English culture is fucking cold compared to the rest of the continent. We are. We do have that. We have that. And that we have that. Italian men literally like kiss each other for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we're not quite, you know.
The Spanish, like the Catholic countries, they're a lot more like conscientious and family oriented than like us Western European people who are like fucking cold, robotic, like.
I wouldn't say cold and robotic at all.
We are, especially the English, which is why we vibe with the Germans, because the Germans, like that whole Germanic cultural, like, coldness is part of it. But it's not as remote. I wouldn't say that the Scandies are cold. They're just remote, if you know what I mean. It's either they're, like, have that dry affect, or they're like Bjork and they're like away with the fairies. There's something kind of remote. It's like weird.
Well, fairies are a legit thing.
Or the Celtic, the Celts, though, they're quite a fiery people. But again, like, those tend to be Catholic territories, and they're a lot more warm. The Irish are a fucking warmer people. The English are fucking cold as shit, dude.
Warm because they're trying to get in your pocket and steal your wallet, man.
I can't believe you just fucking said that. I can't believe you fucking said that,
I'm
Jake.
I'm joking. He
said you're the worst of the worst.
I tease,
you're like a southern, like Anglo-Saxon Protestant English man. So you can't say any racism whatsoever. You're from Oxfordshire.
It's not racism, it's a little bit of banter towards the Irish.
You're from Oxfordshire, dude. You're like at the center of like the fucking problem.
Center of the problem.
Yeah, man.
I wouldn't say that.
You're the privileged white male of the privileged white males, like a high tier of that. Like
Oxford, okay. The city's so beautiful. Hitler didn't want to bomb it.
Yeah, true. True. But yeah, hopefully some of that white male privilege helps with finding us an apartment.
Don't get it.
Send us good vibes. And I mean it. Like, if you do have a spare moment, any of the listeners, to send us some positive energy on our search, on our hunt for
we need
all the thoughts and prayers, all the good intentions that we can get, because it's really crazy out here. And but we're doing well. We're a good team, which is good. There's been minimal fighting this time around, because every time we've had to search for places, me and Jake always end up fighting and like bickering at each other and like hen pecking each other. It's just couple shit. IKEA also makes us fight as well. IKEA and hunting for flats. Two things that were, well, I think we're better now. We've grown up a lot. Because we've been together since we were like 20.
Those two things are also intrinsically linked. Unfortunately.
House hunting stresses us out. And yeah, we tend to fight.
IKEA
really isn't that bad, dude.
I hate it so much.
He throws a tantrum every time we enter one. And it like makes the situation so much more tedious.
You just shouldn't be there. Human beings shouldn't be there. It's not, you know, it's just too...
Could I tell the story of what happened last time we were there?
No.
Why? Why? Because it involves something embarrassing on your end. Why not?
No,
have a sense of humor about yourself.
Fine.
Jake got diarrhea the last time. He literally, I think you ate the weird meatballs.
No, because did we have meatballs before we started?
Yeah, you ate the
you
ate the weird meatballs, and I was like, I wouldn't if I were you, because those look proper sketch. And this wasn't like a nice IKEA, it was like the IKEA out by Wembley. And you ate the meatballs, and then we got into the section, because you know how it's like a maze. So we were in the very beginning of the downstairs section where you're supposed to pick up the stuff that you want. And then Jake was like, oh my God, I got a shit.
I need a shit. Dude, I could literally feel like the fucking meatballs exploding in my stomach and like and the fucking, my belly go, I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be fucking brutal.
And then I was like, dude, what do you want us to do? Like, we've come halfway through this giant warehouse already. We can't turn back now. And you're like, you got to leave it. You got to leave the trolley. You're like panicking. You're like, it's an emergency. It's an emergency. And I was like, I'm not leaving the trolley because I just got all my stuff. So like, you need to sort this out. It's like a you problem. And then you were like so mad. You're like, you're so uncompassionate. You're so uncompassionate. And I was like, I told you not to eat the fucking meatballs, didn't I? And then you went running away. And I think you luckily found a bathroom. In enough time. And then you came back. And then we got further in. And you were trying to rush me at this point. Because you said you needed to poop again.
Yeah, my belly's still
and I was
feeling
like,
good.
I can't rush through. I need to like look at the color of the plates that I'm getting, this and that. Like, I'm not going to rush. Like, if you need to poop again, go and poop. So then you had to rush.
She was like, plates. Great, get them. Let's go.
I was like, no, I need to choose that the type of plates I'm getting. And then you fucking ran away again and like didn't return for like nearly 45 minutes. And I was worried because you weren't picking up your phone.
You were sitting in their fucking dodgy IKEA bathrooms.
I know you were. And by the time you came back, you were red in the face. But it was clear that you felt better, but you were mad that you had just like shit yourself in IKEA. And you made the rest of the journey through the thing really, really, really difficult.
It's like, I've had a bad time. I don't want to go home. I just want to leave.
No, and I was basically trying to like get the stuff that I wanted, like relax, choose stuff. And you were like trying to rush us through the thing. And I didn't get everything I wanted because you just didn't want
to
be there.
I just wanted to go. I just wanted to leave at that point after a double barrel fucking explosion.
So this time round, we have to, not only are we moving and dealing with real estate agents, we also will have to take a trip to IKEA eventually. So hopefully next time Jake will be on his best behavior and not have a repeat of last time.
No meatballs. That's my rule now.
Exactly.
Everyone talks about those fucking meatballs, which is why I got them. So I think the first time we went, I didn't get them. I got a hot dog or something else.
No. You got like a cinnamon bun?
Oh yeah, bun. Cinnabon, that was it.
Yeah, they have cinnamon buns there now.
And then this time I was like, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to get the meatballs this time. Never again.
Bad idea.
Never again.
Bad idea. We should just like not eat there.
They're fucking grim anyway, man.
They're not nice.
It's like school dinner meatballs.
Like prison meatballs.
Like tinned meatballs. Like
oh my god.
Shit meatballs.
Oh my god.
I mean?
It's
it was
so
not good. I don't know why everyone hypes those fucking meatballs.
It's so gross. But we'll go like last, like once we've actually secured the place, we'll go and like, we'll do one trip. We won't do multiple trips because I can't handle all of that again. And yeah, we've been good this time. We've been a team. We have a spreadsheet. We're being very efficient. We're waking up early because you have to wake up early in order to see the listings, because usually by the time they're even on the website, 10 people have already like put in offers. That's just like the crazy market that we're in right now. So we're like having to wake up super early and then also go to a bunch of viewings, which takes up time, and it's just like bleh. So if episodes are a little sparse, that's why. But yeah, we'll still be checking in, and we'll obviously try our best to do one every week as we normally do. That'll still be staying.
We've still got book club this Sunday.
Yes, so we're doing book club. We actually put it to a vote on Patreon, and we had Paulia's Free Men, Free Women, Carl Jung's The Red Book, Chaos, which were the other two.
The Game of Life by Timothy Leary and The Invisible Cloak by Terence and Dennis McKenna.
And it was a close call, but Red Book won, which I'm
really...
It wasn't
really that close. Red Book kind of smashed
it. Everyone chose Red Book, which I'm kind of excited about because it shows our audience is like pretty schizo, just like we are. But at the same time, Red Book is also notoriously difficult to go to read. But it'll be fun because our book club is like an open format, and everyone calls in and we all just talk about it together. So we can all kind of like unpick this like notoriously complicated text together, which I'm really excited to do. So this Sunday, tomorrow, as of recording this, we're going to have our introduction session to the book club, and it will be recorded and put up on Patreon. So if you want to join us for book club, if you want access to the content in book club, even if you can't make it on the live day, the recordings will be on Patreon. If you want to support the podcast, if you want access to our Discord so you can chat to us, if you want weekly bonus episodes, pledge whatever you can to our Patreon. Thank you guys for listening this week, and we shall catch you again later. Goodbye.
Bye.